All right, we will start the or continue the process of the work group looking at areas of general administration and general government reform, and we will have part of our committee here for this, and then Senator Ridgeway will be joining us as she's presenting a bill currently. Senator Krause.
We're in Section 3, I know, and I don't know, Section 6, and I'm on page 3. It talks a little bit about the governor staying in Jefferson City to avoid costs of trips around the state. And I'd be interested if anybody's here that could tell us if the governor's actually cut his transportation budget for himself traveling around the state to sign bills. Right here for the governor's office that could potentially tell us where the budget. If he's done that, or
if not, is there anybody from the office, OA, office administration here? No. You know, I think that's interesting. I think we should look at that. Angie, is there or Dan? Okay. Oh, there he is.
Kelvin, you're
how timely.
Your ears must have been burning. We're on in Section 6, page 3, and it talks about the governor staying in Jefferson City instead of and cutting his transportation around the state. I know it's important that the governor gets around the state and sees the different areas. I think they're more or less hitting on the signing of bills around the state, and maybe we can cut the cost of his travel around the state. Has that been done? I know that, I mean, we've had a couple bad years here, and how much has he cut that transportation budget for himself traveling around the state?
I don't have any of the figures, Senator, on those particular issues, but I can tell you that what we're looking to do across the state in cutting some of our budgets is using what we call telepresence. And it's a part of our unified communications plan that allows us to cut these various costs. And if I could give you an example, some of our telepresence units that are across the state of Missouri, Kansas City, St. Louis, Jefferson City, soon to be in Springfield, allows us to take our boards and commissions, allows us to take a variety of our organizational meetings, and instead of incurring the cost of travel, we're able to do that in a way that allows the individuals to really meet across the internet, so to speak. We see that as a significant savings. We believe that the governor's office will be participating in that and will do some of that. There are projections that I'd love to, talk about at some point in time in terms of what we're already seeing in terms of savings and costs. And I would also encourage any of the members of the committee, we'd love to do a demonstration for you to show you exactly what it looks like. But it is futuristic that says we want to cut our travel costs by 10%. We've done that across the board. We're doing that across the board with each and every one of our agencies. I know I have basically sent out a memorandum to all of the agencies to cut their travel costs by 10%. Thus far, it is successful, continues to happen. That with the consolidation of our car pools by taking our vehicles from across the different cities and across the different agencies, pooling those vehicles also helps with that expense. But we anticipate that down the road we'll be able to do some of that. I just don't have the exact figures in front of you, but we are moving in that direction.
Okay. And to be bipartisan, since we're talking about travel, I'd be interested to see the per diem we get for or the mileage we get here in our offices and whatnot, and see if we can what other states are paying for mileage, because I know senators and representatives travel back and forth to their districts, which they need to. They need to be in their districts. But I'd like to see if we're on par with other states around us, and if we're making if we're getting too much mileage, maybe we need to reduce our own mileage.
And I would also say to you, Senator, one of the other things that we have done is we've cut our costs there. The federal government comes out on a pretty much an annual basis, and they give you the reimbursement rate for travel. And we have continuously, during my tenure, stayed below the federal government rate. I know that often Office of Administration will basically set that rate for the rest of the state agencies. We recommend what those rates are. The House and the Senate at times will follow that same rate. And so as you see the reduction in the reimbursement for travel, that's what it is. I believe that we are probably, we always usually stay a couple of cents below whatever the federal government is. We've followed that for the last year. And what that does is it gives us increased savings when we do things like that. It means that we're spending less on reimbursing people for their travel at a rate that's below the federal government. And I've got some figures that could probably tell you what we've saved thus far in the last year on being able to do that.
On that note, I believe that just in the last year, that at least on the Senate side, we lowered our reimbursement per mile.
That's correct.
Per diem twice.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yes, then that would have been consistent with what we've done each time in the Office of Administration. And as I said, under usual circumstances, the House and the Senate will probably follow us when we issue the edict across state agencies on where we're going to be with the reimbursement rate.
Kelvin, on the idea of reducing travel, you know, across the different agencies by 10%, you know, in these difficult times, I mean, that to me seems like a pretty modest reduction. I mean, what would happen to the process of delivering state government to our constituents? How would it change if we put a moratorium on all state travel?
Senator, I believe that you would probably have some level of difficulty with some of our agencies. For instance, corrections, some of that travel is related to transferring inmates from point A to point B. When you have an elimination completely of state travel, and I'm going to basically definitionally say that it meant when you get in a vehicle as a state employee and you're going from point A to point B, that would be considered state travel. You've got your social service agencies that may have to go and actually visit some of the children that may be in a situation where they're in a home or they've got some of those other things. You'll find your employees that have to travel to do that. So there are probably some circumstances where a complete moratorium would probably mean some difficulty as it relates to delivering state services. But there are opportunities for us to continue to increase our ways of reducing travel. The 10% was our first real opportunity to do so. I think that I'm not sure when state government has done that in the past. It may have occurred. But we basically took it upon ourselves. And when we did our rebooting last year, we talked about that. We, you may remember, Senator, we presented that to you. And so all of our agencies now have been given the memorandum that has come from me to reduce, and we are seeing those reductions. It's slow because, again, the mentality has not been that way in the past, but we're getting there. But I do believe, to your question, Senator, the issue of a complete moratorium would be difficult in some cases.
Okay. Just so everybody knows in the audience, we have these emails, and seven of them, the first seven, deal with more or less the governor's travel.
Yes, sir.
So seven different emails.
Government travel or the governor's? The governor's travel.
Travel.
If I recollect correctly, there's not a line item in the governor's budget for travel. Is that correct?
I don't believe so, but then I would probably, not having seen that specific budget, I believe that you give the amount, and basically within inside that office, they probably have their own line items for what that might be. But Senator,
so it's someplace
in
the E&E. As Senator Nieves,
maybe more for us than the commissioner would be to just, in general, whether we're talking about the governor's office or the Senate and the House or OA or whatever, maybe we just need to look at more closely defining what essential travel is for all of us. You know, senators and representatives have to get from their home district to the Capitol, but we probably all wouldn't have to use our imaginations very far to think of times when people, state employees by whatever title, are doing what I think anybody would consider non-essential travel and being reimbursed for that.
That's a great point. You know what I'd like the committee to have access to is first we'll start at home here. I'd like to see if we can get a breakdown between the travel that the General Assembly, both the Senate and the House, do in district and get reimbursed for. Not their travel to and from the Capitol, from their homes, but how much they're being reimbursed for travel within their district. And then, Commissioner, can you get us a little bit more detail on maybe how this first step?
Yes, sir.
What we're being able to save with this 10% cut, and then maybe across the areas that you're responsible for, what we're actually spending.
Absolutely.
Maybe to break it down in what you would consider essential, travel in some of those scenarios that you shared with the committee.
Yes, sir.
And then, I have two different categories. You know, certainly travel to go to conferences, training.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage my colleagues whenever if you get an opportunity to go and actually see the teleconferencing.
Telepresence is what we call it, TP, but it's the same.
It's amazing.
Philosophy terms of teleconferencing. Yes, sir.
If we have the ability to have the people that are here in Jefferson City be in the Truman Building, and then people in St. Louis, be at the Wainwright, and then where do we have it in Kansas City?
We have Kansas City at the Fletcher Daniels Building. Yes, sir.
And be able to have a meeting.
Yes.
And nobody's leaving their town.
That's right.
You know, it's going to save taxpayers a lot of money.
I think the more we use it. What the senators would also see is that having all three of those locations hooked up, it's just like me being right here, you being there, only we're in different cities. And we think that is a tremendous opportunity. Again, there's a lot of money associated with our boards and commissions in reimbursement for their travel to Jefferson City for their meetings. But if we were able to regionalize it in such a way that you didn't have a lot of travel, then the state is not reimbursing that cost. And so the investment in the telepresence system allows us to have tremendous savings, and it's a good investment that we believe pays dividends over a period of time.
So along with that, if you can give the committee an estimate.
Yes, sir.
Be conservative on it. I mean, as far as if we start employing.
Telling me to be conservative.
I know you're conservative. Be conservative as far as the number you give us. If we start the process of employing this more and more, this technology, what can we anticipate,
yes,
as far as the savings?
We can do that because what I can tell you is that as we looked at last year, we can cost out those travel expenses across state government agencies were for last year. Then what you can see is there's a memo that's sent by me to all of the agencies pretty much saying we're going to reduce our travel costs by 10%. The governor gave me that edict, and I put it in memorandum, and we sent it across. And then what you're going to be able to see is the reduction that has taken place since that memorandum across those boards, and you'll start to see exactly what's going on and how we're moving towards that 10%. Just as of about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I sent another memorandum to the state agency directors, letting them know how they were doing in terms of their projections. Are they on the line to basically be able to hit the 10% at the end of the fiscal year, whether they're under or whether they're over? So we've been able to do that and gladly share that with you.
Good. At this, go ahead.
I'm Senator. Ready to move on. Page 12.
Well,
page 12, Bob Patterson, Columbia, thinks we should sell the governor's plane and lease or rent a plane when the governor needs to use a plane. It's interesting concept. I don't know how much the governor, how much do we spend annually on the governor's plane and the maintenance and the pilot and.
I think we've done that, haven't we?
We have.
Sold a number of planes.
We, back in between 2000 and 2001, we used to have what is called probably a King Air jet. And we sold that particular plane during that time when we had difficult economic times. I believe then Governor Holden sold that plane. We have a fleet of planes throughout the state of Missouri. Some of those planes are used by a variety of people, a variety of organizations. For instance, I can tell you there are times when the Public Service Commission will use a state plane to have a hearing in a remote place in the state where there is probably going to be a issue involving a utility. I know that some of our boards and commissions may use a state plane. You also have MoDOT that has at their disposal for their commissioners state planes. So there are a variety of our state planes that are now vested as a fleet with the public service, public safety, that basically operates that. But I think we have the details of the information that you're talking about. We could probably get that across the board. I don't know that there's a specific assignment with those other vehicles, but I'm sure that there's information that we could get.
I would like to, if the chairman's discretion, I'd like to do an analysis on the planes, the cost, and exactly why we're using. I mean, the commissioners can drive just like legislators drive to the districts. I mean, what's the benefit to getting them there so quickly? I mean, I think that we can potentially have a significant savings if there's a fleet of planes. I'd like to do some analysis there and see if we can cost savings.
Yeah, I think that what we'd like to see is, where were we 5 years ago or 7 years ago as far as the size of our fleet? How have we downsized that fleet? And, quite frankly, that's news to me that we've got commissions and commissioners flying around to different parts of the states on our state aircraft. You know, I appreciate the fact that we have to get the governor different places. But, again, in this era of the new technology that we have,
yes.
I think we look harder and harder to find ways, to have less costly travel. And every time you start up a plane, I got to think that's the most costly way to get people around.
Well, I can tell you that, to your point, we've sent out this week I sent out a memorandum to our state agency directors asking them to participate in the demonstration of the telepresence project so that they can start to look at ways within their agencies to use the telepresence as a vehicle to cut down travel costs and these other things that you're talking about. We would encourage the same with respect to some of the examples that I just presented to you. And I think that that is a wonderful way through our unified communications to do just that.
Good. Senator Nieves.
And I think it kind of goes back to what we talked about the other day where, we have these ribbon cuttings and all these different things that are nice to do when we're flush with money, like having premium cable channels at your house when you're making a lot of money. But, a lot of this stuff has just simply got to go. I am in favor of government running well. I am in favor of seeing the governor have certain rights and privileges. I mean, I agree with Senator Lemke. We need to get the governor around the state. But as I sit here and just think in my mind, and maybe I'm letting my imagination go too far, but when I think of all the boards and commissions and commissioner of this and board member of that we're flying all over the state, I have a feeling that if we really take a good look at that, we're going to realize that, one of the nice little perks of being on one of these boards or commissions or being a commissioner is having these airplanes almost at your disposal. And we just can't do it anymore. And so I think we do need to see something, some sort of analysis that would let us know what is happening with these planes. What are they being used for? Who's flying on them? Where are they going? That type of thing.
Senator, we would have to ask the Department of Public Safety to assist us with that effort, as they are the entity that basically has the fleet at their disposal. And so I believe that they are the ones that probably keep those records. And we'll ask them to assist us with this effort.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Moving on, I'm in still in tab six. There are a number across the different areas that we're focusing on. A number of different emails coming from, again, as they identify themselves, sometimes not with name and address and phone number, but as state workers. The idea of considering decreasing staff levels in different areas. This one in particular talks about decreasing social service staff on the income maintenance side. And again, you know, these might not be areas that we particularly, this committee is looking at, but I guess the point that I'm trying to make is that I hear from many state employees that we should be looking, you know, within, you know, their agencies and making sure that we're being as efficient as possible with those that work in those agencies and the amount of people that we have in those agencies. So I think that that's something that we want to take a greater look at in great depth as far as are we getting, you know, a full day's work for a full day's pay, you know, out of our state employees across the spectrum. Anything else in seven? Tab seven? Okay, tab, let's go on to... I don't have anything in seven. Did anybody? Just a few emails there. How about eight? We'll move on to eight. And eight was ITSD, so I think I did have a number of them within...
I don't have a specific email, but in the IT departments, I know that some people were saying that combining of IT for different agencies might save some resources, some money. I'd be interested to see if we've looked at doing that to save some money, potentially the, you know, IT department for, say, conservation, the IT department for Department of Education, maybe we can combine those resources instead of having two IT departments.
Yes.
Commissioner, I think we started that process. Or
yes, we did.
We're in what year of our consolidation are we in?
I believe we began our consolidation efforts in about 2005. We started to look at that. There was an executive order that was issued to look at consolidation of all ID departments that was under the executive branch and the governor's purview with the previous administration. We went down that road about 2007. We started doing that by 2008. Most of the consolidation was taking place. We still are involved in consolidation. I think a number of the theories of consolidation was that there were large economies of scale that could take place, particularly as you look at the purchasing power of all of those agencies as once. When you're buying computers or you're buying technology, if you can do it at large scales, you get discounts. And then with those discounts, it saves the taxpayers money. Now, that's the theoretical part of consolidation, and there are a lot of other things that go along with that. Consolidation in some cases has been very good, and in some cases it's been very difficult to do, particularly when there are hard economic times like we are experiencing right now. You're having to unbundle a lot of the things that you at one point in time had bundled. We have significant legacy systems within our IT department that are quite old and antiquated. And as you start to bring those legacy systems offline and look at new systems, it's also a costly issue. The other thing that I would say about the IT is it consolidates all of your information technology employees. And we have some significant issues there, largely because we are experiencing a number of our, I'll give you an example, with some of our IT employees. Let's say that at one point in time they were dealing with COBOL, which is a very ancient legacy system. Well, people came on to the system as dealing with COBOL. that system is so long and antiquated and so long ago, but we still have employees that basically are associated with those legacy systems. You've got your newer systems that you bring on, and it's been very difficult. We're starting to see some of our employees leave for better circumstances. As you know, we just announced 800 new employees. IBM announced 800 new employees in Columbia. We've started to see a number of our employees start to drift in that direction. The university has just raised the salaries of their IT employees, which means that their salaries are going to be significantly higher. So we're starting to see some brain drain leave, as we also have older employees in legacy systems. So it's been a very difficult situation as it relates to our information technology, and it also creates a large GR pot that often you can imagine when you've got downturn in your economy. That is one of your areas that often becomes fodder for budget cuts. So it's been difficult for us, but theoretically what I would say to you, Senator, is the consolidation efforts and being able to take economies of scale and utilize them to the best of our abilities, in principle sounds very good, and it can be, but we had a shift in our economics, and it's been a little difficult, but we're managing. Yes, we continue to move forward with consolidation, and for all practical purposes, I would say that in most of our agencies, not all of our agencies, we are consolidated. All of those employees that still may exist in another agency like social service or mental health, they are now OA employees through the Information Technology Office. They are consolidated.
Okay, on that note, there's an email. It's page 23. Of tab 8, and it comes from an upset IT worker. And what this IT worker recommends is to unconsolidate IT. And I, you know, the point that is made as you go through this is that whoever this is making an argument that the IT department is, in its current form, top-heavy, is the way I read this, you know, as far as those that make 100K plus. I guess my question for you, Commissioner, is through this process of consolidation, while there are and can be economies of scale, what have we done with, you know, the middle and upper management, you know, as we've consolidated this all together? What does the FTE picture look like, you know, at the top level of this department?
I would tell you today, again, as you look at all of the departments throughout state government currently, the IT department would be our largest in the Office of Administration. I would say to you that there are probably 1,000 employees that are a part of the OT, OAI TSD. But again, what you're looking at is a number of employees in one agency, and let's say you have a couple of hundred in a social services department, which is a large department. When you go through the consolidation, then all of those employees become employees of OA, and so you are large. What has happened over the last 2 or 3 years is there have been significant FTE cuts in there, so we continue to downsize more than we continue to add. But because you're consolidating different departments, you are going to grow, and it gives the perception of growing. As it relates to the higher salaries, I'm not sure that we have more than 10 employees that might have a $100,000 case kind of salary. The director of IT is here. He could probably answer that question. But when you're consolidating other managers, you bring them in. And if we're managing correctly, once you start to see that you can do this better and more efficient by, instead of having two people assigned to two different departments, we've now basically moved in having one person at the very top assigned to two departments. So you're starting to become more flat in your hierarchical organization rather than continuing to be vertical, and you bring those silos down. So I would probably say we have the ability to tell you exactly what those pay scales are for our IT professionals, but I do not believe that we have significant numbers that are over 100K. If you'd like to ask the director, I believe he's here.
Director? Who's the director?
Oh, Young.
Mr. Young.
Senators, I bring to you Mr. Douglas Young, who is the Director of Information Technology. He's been with us in this role about a year. He's a 28-year, 29-year, I'm probably aging him, veteran of state government. Spent a large number of his years as the Director of Information Technology in the Conservation Department. So we were able to bring him from conservation to basically direct our IT services. I'll let him answer any questions that you might have.
Director Young, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Senator, in regard to your questions, we only have one ITSD employee that I'm aware of that, that makes over $100,000. And
now, is that you?
I'm sitting in front of you, sir.
So there are no other that you're aware of within IT that make over $100,000?
No, sir. And since taking office, we have actually reduced our FTE, our general revenue FTE, by 10%. We have also reduced our E&E expenses over the last 4 years by 32%. And so we continue to strive to find ways to work better, faster, cheaper. Consolidation has allowed us to do that. As the commissioner spoke, my upper-level management, I used to have three deputy CIOs. I used to have four. I've reduced that down to three. We have reduced five of our IT directors assigned to the various agencies. As the commissioner said, now we have IT directors that are responsible for multiple agencies. So we continue to look at the higher end of our organization. We are also in process of eliminating one whole slot of manager positions, our upper level managers. Again, taking that down and have supervisors doing more in eliminating a whole layer of middle management. So we're certainly trying to get to the numbers that you suggest are there that we can find for savings.
So those that manager level that you're speaking of, I mean, and I don't know if it's in this department in particular, but I've certainly heard it as addressing other departments where you had managers actually managing one or two or three employees. I mean, is it your goal then to have those managers or supervisors supervising half dozen, 10 employees instead of two and three?
Absolutely. We're striving for a span of control somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 employees. And so instead of having the CIO, deputy CIO, manager 2, manager 1, supervisor 2, supervisor 1, and then the employees that are actually doing the job, we're trying to get to the CIO, the deputies, IT directors, and then managers. So
good. Sounds like it's going in the right direction. There was an email in here that addressed that we were taking old computers and rehabbing them or something, and then that it was a fruitless effort. It was costing a lot of money. You know anything about that?
Certainly, that's one of the areas that we're looking at, Senator. The previous organization would take computers from an agency that perhaps got more federal funding, and so they had, say, a replacement cycle of 3 years. Staff was then taking those computers and taking those to a general revenue agency and trying to run them for another 3 to 4 years. Certainly, I believe that is not cost efficient for the state, and we're taking a hard look at that. We have mandated to all agencies to go to a 5-year PC replacement cycle. We're seeing that we think our computers can run that long, and we think that's the economically viable thing to do. So that's going to put an end to some of this musical PCs. An op-ed piece in the paper last week would have us believe that folks buy a computer at the end of the year because they have money and they're turning over computers every year. I would challenge that that's certainly not so. The average age of our computers in state government is around 4 years. In fact, we have issues that last year we only replaced somewhere around 2,800 PCs. The year before that, 3,200 PCs. We're headed for a wall here in the future where we're going to have the bulk of our PCs being out there at time to replace them, and unless the economy turns around, we're going to have difficulty doing that.
What's our, if it's the correct word, what's our total fleet of PCs?
Somewhere in the neighborhood of 40,000.
Right.
Yes, sir.
What is Cobalt?
That code for something?
I have some very old people that work for me that can explain that.
Okay. Other questions when we have Mr. Williams, right?
Young, sir.
Young. Sorry. Young Mr. Williams is what I meant to say. No. All right. I don't have anything else in that tab.
Well, I have just a,
please,
a
go
general.
Ahead.
Do you all have copies of all these emails that we're looking at?
No, sir, I do not.
Something that they could, because there's a bunch of men here that name people by name that I don't think.
Which we're not.
Yeah, we don't right. need to get into that, but I'd.
I need.
And I don't want to get into this, but there's a bunch of names named, and you know, all of us that are in this line of business know that there's three sides to every story. But if I was in your position, I would probably just want to take a peek at some of these. And
suffice it to say, Senator, we have a lot of employees that are not happy with consolidation because, quite frankly, they've been put to work.
Sure. And if that's the case, I'm with you.
Well, but again, the idea that we're walking through this process and encouraging, you know, our employees, you know, to be honest and upfront, you know, with the legislature and, you know, point out, you know, where we have concerns, problems, and that type of thing. So any information that we have, I think, you know, certainly should be, you know, looked at seriously. And then, you know, we don't want to, I know it looks like it, but we don't want to micromanage your department.
Understood.
But, you know, we do want, we do feel responsible that we have to be, you know, accountable to the people and the, you know, and the taxpayers. So we appreciate any information that you get that you're able to, because I think it's about, you know, morale within your department also. I mean, obviously there are some workers, like you said, that maybe got passed over or, you know, because of consolidation, they're taking on new responsibilities and without maybe, you know, more money.
Absolutely.
Right? So that doesn't always make for an happy employee. So if there are, I'm sure you have the policies in place that address some of these things that have come to light, you know, in some of these emails that we've received. So that's enough said. I thought this was interesting, and I'd like to have some feedback about the Lifestyle Ladder Program. And we received a number of emails, and I think that it cost the state approximately $6 million. Can you guys confirm that?
Yeah.
That's something we've addressed? Okay.
Yes. Senator, we do have in the audience the Executive Director of Missouri Consolidated Health, Mr. Rick Bowles, who is here. And if the Senate would like to address any of those questions to Mr. Bowles, we'd gladly make
That'd
him available.
Great.
Mr. Bowles, if you would please come forward.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you. So you want to address that question, the idea of what's going on with Lifestyle Ladder?
Absolutely. First off, Lifestyle Labs Ladder is a beginning wellness program, and we are spending $2.2 million a year on this program. And it's just the start. But in addition to this, because we have this program, our actuaries are able to cut 1% off our projected costs for the year, which is about a $4.2 million reduction in costs. So in other words, if we didn't have this program or one like it, the actuaries would require us to have an additional $4.2 million to cover projected bills. what this is saying is that a small, significant portion of the people take advantage of this, and it's reflected in the savings in their health style, and we spend less money taking care of them in the long run.
So is it working, and we are not getting rid of it then? Is that what I'm hearing?
We are not getting rid of it. In fact, I would have plans to expand upon our entire care management program.
And is it, I'm sorry to cut you off, but this is some type of proactive measure on our part to make sure people are living healthier lifestyles?
Yes, sir. We're trying to change behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So that we are, that's the only place we can save money, is bending the cost curve. How much we're spending, what, $550 million mm-hmm. a year to take care of state employees?
Right. So
trying to reduce that.
So a couple of the emails made reference to that, you know, people lie on these things and they're not really telling the truth, and, you know, they may say they don't smoke, but they smoke, or whatever the case may be. But the bottom line is, if we do this, whether the people are lying or not, we get a better rate from the actuary and we save money. Is that correct?
That's correct. The reality is that about 20% of our population is driving 80% of our cost,
okay.
In a rule of thumb. And we only have to get a small tick in that population to change for significant savings.
Okay. Senator?
I think I agree with Senator Lemke's assessment. I found out the other day that that what we say into these microphones is being broadcast. So
I forgot to remind everybody that
my name is Joe Blow from Idaho. And anyway, I'll tell you what happens with me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I look at that lifestyle ladder as a way to save X amount of dollars per month,
mm-hmm.
and my wife and I fill it out when we're supposed to most of the time, and we get that savings. So I think what Senator Lemke said in terms of whether or not people are actually doing the real things in that lifestyle ladder, we're still saving money because of how the actuaries project what's going to happen. I mean, I'm just wondering how do we save that $4 million because we have this program? Or maybe my better question would be, sooner or later, aren't we going to find out that a lot of people are not really doing this and that our real true expenses are not being reduced? Or are we actually seeing the cost of our medical services go down as a result of people participating in this program?
As far as our experience, Missouri Consolidated experience, we've just begun this process. What we're relying on are actuaries that have a great deal of healthcare data at their disposal. And what their judgment is that with a program such as this, we can count on at least a 1% savings in our cost by implementing it. Now, let me give you another example. I'm over 50. I'm overweight. I've got gray hair. My dad has diabetes. I'm a poster child for developing diabetes. When I filled out my HRA, and this is giving too much information, I understand. But when I filled out my HRA for my discount at the start of this year, I basically told the truth. I filled it out because it was easy, and there's nothing there that's harmful. What happens is, because I fit a certain profile, now I have someone from Lifestyle Ladder calling me and saying, are you interested in our weight loss program? Would you like to talk to a weight loss counselor? Are you exercising? Do you know that if you walked 30 minutes three times a week, you lower the chance of you developing diabetes by 50%? So this is where we're trying to move the needle, is we're picking out specific people to move the needle on.
Sure. Well, that very much answers my question, because, you know, evidently when I filled mine out, I didn't end up any red flags because nobody ever calls me about it. You know, we just fill it out and we get the discount.
No offense, but we don't want to waste money on you.
Yeah.
You should have been a little bit more accurate with the information that you provided to him. Maybe you would have got a phone call.
I heard it next time.
So we're contracting with a company to actually do make these calls and do the
yes,
follow up and be proactive in dealing with at least a certain portion of our population of
yes,
state
sir,
workers that, you know, are getting their health insurance through the state, right?
Yes, sir. And what we're also doing is part of our plan now, as we're moving forward, I've recently hired a medical director, part-time medical director, a quality director, and we're tying in our utilization management, our care management, our case management with our other vendors, so we can take all of this data, consolidate it, and find out where we can make the biggest difference in people's lives. And that's going to be where we're making a little bit of savings now. That's where we're going to make big savings as we go on.
So when you come before the Appropriations Committee in the Senate, you're going to be able to share some good news with us as far as how this program is working.
And I already have.
And how you...
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I'd be glad to do that.
Yeah, good. Okay, any other questions? Good. Thank you. Click tab 10. All right, this is... Go ahead.
Tab 10,
number
page
1.
Two.
I got one. I got page one. Sell the lottery to a private company. I think that is an interesting concept.
What?
So, private company, that wouldn't also include, like, if we wanted to get it back to the mob and have them run the numbers racket for us?
I assume you have to whoever.
You want to maybe talk just a few minutes about private? Yeah, yeah.
The only state that shoe high is represented by services to the lottery. The only state that has moved forward on a privatization is Illinois. Dan is correct. Several states have looked at it. The state of Indiana several years ago actually floated an RFI. Governor Daniels ultimately did not pull the trigger on that. Illinois has pulled the trigger. They have privatized their lottery. They hope to increase their revenue through that mechanism by outsourcing. Something states have looked at, certainly a very common model around the globe. Country, it is really rare.
Okay. All right. Just in the Illinois model, what's the dynamics of it? I mean,
They used to, have state employees and structure much like we have that provided those ongoing support services. They basically bundled all of that and transferred the risk, if you will, to a private company that is guaranteeing a rate of return. And if the guaranteed rate of return is not met, then the private vendor will have to make up that difference. So really it's a transfer of risk, if you will, from the state to a private entity that believes that they can meet those expectations.
In how does the size of their lottery compare to the size of ours? I know it's much larger.
Sure.
How much larger?
Probably close to four times.
Four times.
Yeah, I think we're selling close to $1 billion a year here. I think they're a $4 to $5 billion lottery.
And what did they receive in this agreement with the private company?
Enhanced returns. I don't have the exact figures in my head, Senator, but the guaranteed rate of return is better than their historical performance. And that's what, if it wasn't, they would not have moved.
Okay, all right. Other questions? Thanks, Bill.
Page 2.
Put that on our list to look into. Page 2.
It basically merging the Gaming Commission with the Lottery Commission. Adding a commission.
Any thoughts, Mr. Commissioner?
I don't have any thoughts on that one. I think that's one we would probably bring the two entities together and have that conversation. I know that I don't know that we've had the conversation. I'd probably look and see, are there other states' agencies, look at the consolidation and see if there's economies of scale, but I'd probably want to do some research on that one.
I don't know if that's...
products
activity.
Be interesting to see if we could make some savings there.
Okay, good. We'll look into that. Thank you, Senator. Okay, into tab 11, permits and fees. I don't believe that I had anything highlighted here. Okay. All right. Tab 13, travel. We've spent a lot of time on this already, so I don't think but interestingly enough, the first number one talks about the teleconferencing and something that we've already spent some time on. But as we mentioned the other day, plenty of emails about cell phones for employees. That's going to be on our list to look at that. This is interesting, Commissioner. Let's see. Remove the OA requirement that all state agencies must use Missouri Vocational Enterprises. Their prices on items are a lot higher than that's available out there in the private sector vendors. What do you think about that, Commissioner?
Senator, that is an issue within our purchasing department, OA purchasing, that might have been a statutory provision. With us today is Mr. Jim Maluski, who is our director of purchasing. He could probably tell you if that is a statutory issue, that that requirement is in the statute. Therefore, when you're dealing with contracts, that's going to be a component of that contract. Jim,
come on up.
Senators, coming forward is Jim Maluski, who is our Director of Purchasing and Materials Management for the Office of Administration. Those duties basically take care of our contracts throughout the state of Missouri. Jim has been there for a number of years, probably 16 or so. I'm not sure how long as a director, but he's got a lot of information that he can share with you on that.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hey, Senator. The statute, if I remember correctly, is 217-545-565, basically mandates purchasing from MVE.
Okay. Is that a good deal for the taxpayers?
On certain things. I can't say it's everything. But what I will say is they do give exemptions, which is part of the statute, that if they cannot meet certain market prices, they are it allows an exemption provision where the state agency can go purchase elsewhere if that exemption is provided.
Go ahead. And how is that exemption exercised? I mean, is that through your office?
Or? No, sir. Actually, it goes directly through MVE, and all they do is have to call MVE. And there is through our SAM2 system, there is an exemption number provided and a notation so the agency can procure outside.
Give us an example of how that works.
The one I can recall is the MVE produces laundry chemicals, and certain agencies have found difficulty in using those, such as Fulton State Hospital. And at one time, they requested an exception from that statute, and MVE provided that exception. So now Fulton State Hospital goes outside of MVE for their laundry chemicals.
So that was more based on a ease of use thing than price, right?
In that particular case, there was certain requirements, whether it was things weren't turning out too well or the product was turning things yellow. I can't remember the exact circumstances, but there was a problem with the product that was unacceptable to the state hospital at the time.
Because I like the mission or the intent of MVE, but I don't know if you guys have recently been through the same thing I have, and that is, I'm moving into a new Senate office. And I'm looking at things like chairs and I mean, God bless them for what they do, but good gracious, I mean, seriously, we're talking about two and three times as much through MVE.
And I think what you have to look at, Senator, is what goes into the making of that. Just to be honest, in our procurement, we buy the plywood, we buy all the hardwood. I think you have to look and compare, are they the same item? I mean, you can definitely go to a Walmart and get a pressed material, desk, computer desk, something significantly less than a hardwood desk, absolutely. But again, what you're trying to do is do a comparison of like items. That is what the statute says. If it's a like item, you have to get an exception.
Right. And I certainly understand what you're saying, and I agree with you. I did make my best effort to compare apples to apples, and I'm certainly not a procurement expert. But I just couldn't understand. I mean, they're really not paying these guys all that much to. I don't know if there's. I went and bought stuff at Office Max, you know.
Again, Senator, the only thing I can tell you is they do list and issue a lot of exceptions. They might be able to provide you that list. I don't think they make it difficult. There are certain things they are worried about, but because they need to continue that production cycle in order to provide that vocational rehab service. But I think they would have that information for you, sir.
Jim, who and how are their prices set on their the things that they make and sell?
I believe that is done by the Adult Rehabilitation Group, Director of Adult Rehabilitation. There is a MVE director, and I think they come up with what those costs are.
Do we have any idea what the profit margin they have built into?
I personally don't, Senator. That would be with MVE.
Okay. Can we look at that?
Yeah, we need to.
I'd like to check into that. Okay. All right, moving on here. Number eight. Why do departments still purchase daily newspapers? Are we purchasing daily newspapers?
Senator, I believe that. You probably do have some departments that would purchase newspapers. I know that a lot of your computers will probably provide the online versions of some of those things. Last year, we issued an edict across all state agencies asking the departments to reduce their publications in terms of their purchases. Newspapers would be some of those, and I know that there has been a reduction there. I don't have the exact figure, but things like publications, travel, out-of-state travel, a number of those things we have reduced. Are there subscriptions that are probably still out there? Yes. I don't know whether someone had a 1-3 year subscription, but we have sent the message through a memorandum to the agencies to reduce those publications.
Can we provide for the committee what the figure was, you know, prior to the directive as far as reducing purchasing of publications, and then what it is currently?
We are also currently throughout state government right now looking at all of our state-produced publications to try to reduce the size and scope of our state publications. You may be surprised that there are thousands of state-produced publications within state government, and we believe that this is the appropriate time to reduce the size and scope of that. As technology continues to take off, and we are producing, in some cases, a publication that may be 100 pages or more, where we would distribute that to 100 people. Actually, our ability to PDF that, put it online for everybody to see, rather than printing it off or having it printed, that's one of the other things that we're doing too. So we're going to be looking this year. We hope to have the number that we produce inside state government, and then we will take action to reduce that number.
Good, good. Just out of curiosity, let me see a show of hands of people that use roadmaps. Who uses roadmaps anymore? Kathy or Lyon, you don't use roadmaps. You still use road maps? Yeah. You, the one you unfold, you know, and you got in your glove box? Yeah. I'd like to know what, do you happen to know what MoDOT spends on those road maps that...
I do not know the spin, but I believe MoDOT could probably come up with that. I know that the road maps are provided in each one of the state's vehicles in the glove departments for when the actual employee is trying to get around the state, because we don't have a GPS system, so that's kind of our...
How about that cell phone that we provide for them, though? They could get the GPS on there, can't they?
I don't know if you can in some of these cases. I don't believe I can on...
On your,
Line Center.
Okay. All right. I would like to know the number. If it, somebody get the word to MoDOT, I want to know what they're spending on maps.
Yes, sir.
All right. Good. All right. As we continue, we're making some headway here, Senator.
Absolutely. 13 talks.
Oh, yes. Go
number
ahead.
13 talks about reducing paperwork that actually has to be mailed, more forms online.
Yes, sir.
Have we looked at, I mean, we talked about mail earlier, and there are some people out there still using a 44-cent stamp versus using interoffice or possibly an email. But maybe have we looked at forms that could be done online versus having to – I know I'm in the Army. We do
yes,
evaluations.
Sir. Yes, sir.
We have a card that we stick in the computer and we type in our little code, and we can digitally sign evaluations now. And we can mail them all the way across the country in a matter of minutes. I mean, are we as a state looking at ways to reduce paperwork, slow mail to get things done?
Yes, Senator, I would say that there are probably a number of examples across state agencies where technology now allows us to do that much better than what we have before. It's much easier to take a scan of some document and basically have that available for somebody that they can go online and do that. I believe that you'll find the Department of Revenue is probably very good in that area in terms of what they've been able to do with motor vehicles and licensing that allows the average citizen to go to their number of documents and actually be able to fill those documents out online, and in some cases be able to instantaneously get that back. That is a part of the continued technology that allows us to do that. Where that technology has moved in the last 5 years is significant. We think that there are savings there. At some point in time, you quantify those savings and say, with the purchase of the software to be able to do that, and at the same time reduce the paperwork that's there, because I think that probably hits your question, we're able to do that. Now, have we been able to do that across the board in all of our state agencies? We're still getting there. We still have some of our citizens throughout the state of Missouri that don't have access not only to the computer but to the internet and don't have the broadband speed capability to be able to download those things and then be able to send it back. So we still have some of that out there, but where we're going, we'll be able to do that through e-commerce initiatives over a period of time and drastically reduce that.
Thank you.
It's been brought to my attention that last year, one of the recommendations was that MoDOT quit printing maps, which they have done so, and saved the taxpayers $1.5 million. Here we go. Good. Success. Okay. All right. Now, this is interesting, Commissioner.
Yes, sir.
This one is right in your own backyard. Agencies are forced to pay too much for services that they receive from the Office of Administration. Please consider removing the OA. That's interesting, isn't it? Now, there was a time where we didn't have an Office of Administration as a state. Is that correct?
That probably would be correct. I believe that as it was discussed when we began this particular committee your last time, that you moved towards redoing government was probably back in 1973, 1974. And at some point in time, as you look at the movement towards an office of administration, I often equate that with your private sector business that periodically has somebody that does the operations of the company. And I think of the Office of Administration, something like that. In other words, as you look at the functions of the Office of Administration, particularly with the seven divisions that we have, your information technology, your personnel, your accounting, budget and planning, these are the things that provide the back office operations to equate it to a business or business-like functions that we actually provide. If not, what you end up with is the silos of each different agency trying to supply their own back office operation to pay their bills, do their telecommunications, do their information technology, handle all of their personnel. So what you've seen over the last 10 years with the consolidations of some of these areas, we've talked about information technology, facilities management has consolidated. We are saying in no uncertain terms as a state that we're going to provide an opportunity for somebody that has a greater level of expertise to do these back office operations rather than the individual agencies doing it themselves, which then makes it siloed. And at the same time, you could have different policies in different agencies. So we basically take that back office operation, so to speak, consolidate it and basically provide the management functions for our agencies across the state. Now, does that make people happy all the time? Probably not. And we probably get accused of a number of things, but I would probably believe that your chief executive officer always would believe that having a chief operating officer or having an agency that operates in that way is probably sufficient management. And I believe that that's what we do. So not always going to make people happy, though.
So extending that framework,
yes, sir.
Should we expect then to look to the different divisions, for instance, and not see HR staff in the different divisions?
I mean, that is something that we brought to the attention of the rebooting committee last year, is the philosophy that we think that we have a division of personnel in the Office of Administration. That division of personnel provides a number of the personnel functions throughout the state of Missouri, but yet you have each one of your agencies will have a division of personnel. So again, you've got a siloed kind of situation. It may be time to look at the consolidation to see if you can provide a consistent operation in terms of the personnel functions, because they really are supposed to be consistent across the board. We hire and we basically provide HR kind of operations. That should be consistent across the board and it should be the same. Yet periodically you will have them basically done in very different ways depending on the agency that you're looking at, and I can tell you that that's something that is on the table, looking at whether or not maybe the time has come to look at a consolidation there.
All right, I am on tab 13. Again, it's travel. Most of these are travel, so we've already beat that horse. Let's see. I don't have anything in 14, senators. I think that in 15, I don't have anything in 15. 15? Foundation of. Okay. All right, Commissioner, thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Is Connie Clarkson here from the Division of Professional Registration and Licensing? Okay. Hi, Connie. How are you? Good. Do you want to address the committee with, I think, some ideas that we may have coming down from the governor's office?
Yes.
On boards and commissions?
Yes.
All right, great. Thank you.
I'm sorry. The governor's office asked us last year for all departments to look at ways to reduce the number of boards and commissions. What they've what resulted in that was Senate Bill 991 that was introduced by Senator Scott last year, and Senate Bill 645, which was introduced by Senator Shields. Those two bills were combined in a Senate committee substitute. So So the proposal this year that we've looked at was taking the Senate committee substitute and moving that forward. We're working on finalizing language and then working with the sponsors of that. But in essence, that bill will modify seven boards and commissions, transfer the duties of seven boards and commissions, and eliminate 11 of those boards and commissions. So what that does in reality is reduces the number of board members by 219. And of those 219, that would remove 97 governor appointees, 73 department appointees, and then remove 49 members of the General Assembly from the various boards and commissions that they are assigned to as well. So some of the boards and commissions have not met in several years. Like, some go back to 2002. Their duties have been completed, or their duties can be shifted to another agency that more perfectly fits what their goals are. Some of them have been appointed and never or been established and have never been appointed and never had an appropriation. So they're basically by name only in the books. And so we're looking at reducing those as well. We're hopeful when we move this forward, there's a couple more that we're looking at and trying to work through some negotiations with the two parties. And hopefully we can expand those numbers as well.
Senator Krause.
Is MoDOT the, on there is eliminating the commissioners and going to other states have director of transportation and I'd be interested to see how much we spend to have a MoDOT commission that really doesn't answer to anybody. It's an individual entity that I think could be eliminated, and we could go back to the director of transportation and could report straight to the governor.
Okay. I can certainly do an analysis on that. We can work with MoDOT to do that and then get back with you on that as well.
Connie, do you have any idea if there would be savings realized through the elimination of these boards and commissions?
The ones that I've looked at, there would be some reduction in the cost for mileage reimbursement and meal expenses, but very little of these boards and commissions
have been meeting.
Have been meeting or even receive a per diem that's allowed by statute. So there's not great cost savings to that. But, you know, if they're not meeting and we're continually using resource of someone monitoring those type of things, and some require reports to be provided to the General Assembly, someone monitoring that, we would be able to have some efficiencies improvements in that point.
There's background investigations done when you appoint somebody to these.
Yes.
And those man hours could be reduced well.
Yes. And some of the agencies have multiple duties, so you may see the same duty from agency to agency. So if we reduce that, obviously we're reducing resource and time at that as well.
Great. Thank you. Anything else for us?
I don't think so.
Oh, great. Thank you, Connie.
I will continue to visit with you as we go through this.
Thank you very much. For the work group members, I think that that pretty much covers it. I know that there are a number of things that Senator Ridgeway wanted to present and had some great interest in coming out of these emails. So we will try, as we put our recommendations together, to get her input on those issues. I know that she had a bill that she was presenting, so she wasn't able to join us. But anyway, thank all the staff, the committee members, and all of you that came to join us in this process. And then we'll be putting together to present to the pro tem our recommendations. Thank you. We're adjourned.